You are listening to GeekaBoss Presents Read, Watch, Play. We discuss all things pop culture, including comics, video games, TV, film, and anime.
Hey, it's Christoph and Stu here for GeekaBoss.
Hello.
You're listening to episode 9.
I believe,
of Read, Watch, Play.
Vaguely remember how to do this.
It's been a while.
We talk and we record and we say stuff.
And
then it goes up on the internet.
And we avoid angry rants.
We try to. We usually run straight into them.
Which is ironic because I'm about to start on an angry rant.
You are. Strap yourself in, ladies and gentlemen.
But look, we're sorry it's been quite a long time before.
I'm not sorry. I don't regret any of it.
Stu wishes we weren't podcasting today.
I'm here against my will.
But look, we're here at Oz Comic Con. We've just sat down. We got coffee. We're about to check out the con floor. What's happening, Stu?
Oh, it's buzzing. It's buzzing early. I'm loving it this year. Last year was a bit quiet. This year, it's humming.
I wouldn't define it as quiet. There's like a Just Dance thing set up nearby. So if you hear like pop songs in the background, we haven't decided to serenade you. That's just the sounds of what's going on.
And if you can't hear me for a while, that's because I'm over Just Dancing. I'm not entirely sure that's what everyone wants.
Not at all.
But it's happening, damn it.
So we're at Oz Comic Con, which is on Glebe Island.
Inverted commas,
which is actually an archipelago. So I feel lied to. I feel betrayed.
We want our money back. You're on notice, Oz Comic Con. We're coming for you. And if there's an explosion later today, that's just because you're trying to make the rest of the island. You're breaking it away. Save it for the courts.
Well... So we're at Oz Comic Con, we're looking forward to walking around, chatting to people, just taking it all in. But I mean, for me and my celibate life partner Chris, the con actually started yesterday. They had a media day, and me and Chris were very lucky enough to be invited to interview Sam Lloyd and Rob Mascio, who were from Scrubs, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and how long have you got you with them for a little while?
10 minutes.
Yeah, nice.
But you know, they had a lot to do, and I think we went in about 12:30, and I believe Sam Lloyd plays the lawyer Ted in Scrubs.
Yep.
And Rob Mascio plays the Todd in Scrubs.
The Todd.
So he's the guy who does the high fives, lots of great innuendo.
Were there any high fiving, or was it?
You know, there was. Me and Chris, like, we had to ask for a high five. Yeah. You don't nod. And I don't know if you remember in the show, as he high fived on the way down, he clicks, and he did that. So
nice.
It was really cool. Really cool. And I think there's a photo up on Facebook as well because we were pretty excited about it. So yeah, we got about 10 minutes with them, and then I think after our interview, Sam Lloyd had another interview, then he was rushing off to climb the bridge, enjoying Sydney.
Lovely day.
So what we're going to do is we're going to jump to that interview now. Had a lot of fun, hope you guys enjoy it, and then we'll be back from the con floor.
Yeah, see you guys.
We're keen for.
Like Sunday morning, we're pretty easy, so.
All right. Yeah. That's my opening joke.
Oh, sorry.
Don't worry, I'll tell someone else's joke as an opener.
Okay. All right.
So, is it pretty surreal to come like halfway across the world to Australia and to find people who are pretty into Scrubs?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Quite. It's it's a different land, and the show's been off the air for 5 years.
I can't believe it's been 5 years.
Yeah.
Time flies. It's just gone by fast. But the show's taken on a life of its own, in reruns and syndication, and that, you know,
people find it, and so
we're just kind of riding this wave a little bit.
Yeah. And so you're still finding young fans, like new fans of Scrubs are coming up to you and who have just discovered the show? Does that happen pretty often?
I was walking on the street yesterday, and this girl was handing out ponchos because it was raining, and she's like, oh my god! And she like flipped out, and I was just lost because I went up, because I was like, dude, I didn't know how to get to Park Royal from it. She's like, you don't understand, I've been watching my whole life, and I'm thinking, how can I sleep with this girl right now? I want the directions. I wanted to sleep with her, but I also didn't want to let her down because she recognized me. So people recognize you.
She was also 17. So.
17. She was 17. Actually, she's a school teacher, and she teaches Bible study. So I kind of like
stopped
myself.
Yeah, that's
right,
that stop sign.
Yeah.
But even if people don't recognize you, people will recognize you, but just because they don't come up to you. Which I found, because I thought I was very anonymous yesterday, for example, and it turns out I wasn't.
There just people creeping on you from a distance?
I saw people, because I'm doing a lot of promotion via social media on my various platforms, and I can occasionally look for, like, a hashtag, OzComicCon, and, like, our pictures have come up, and we are not aware that those pictures were taken. So I just find it, you know, it's very interesting.
But yeah, there are people that we were, some kids were taking pictures of us. They couldn't have been more than 18, 19,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
After we got here, so
yeah,
people are still discovering it.
It's just kind of cool, right?
Yeah, that's heaps cool. Because on the way here, me and Chris were talking about how in our teenage years, Scrubs was pretty much like all we watched, and we weren't people as much as sort of collections of Scrubs quotes walking around covered in skin.
Wow.
So we were super, like, the cultural impact it has is tremendous. Yeah. At any point when you guys were making the show, were you like, yeah, this is going to be big. We're going to be doing this for 9 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, we did not know.
We did not know. We it was amazing every year. We were never big when we started out because the network never got behind us and kept switching our time slot like 17 times or something.
I think in Australia it aired like 11 o'clock on a Tuesday night or something. It wasn't in a prime slot.
So we were never, we were always like, are we going to have another year? Every single year we're like, do you think we're going to get another season? And then when it got put into syndication and then it went out on DVD, suddenly people were like, oh, check out this show. And then it kind of got a little bigger. And then we got like another 2 years after that. So
that's very funny, and it reminds me of what used to happen. We used to shoot at a hospital that used to be called North Hollywood Hospital, and then they realized they could make money leasing a hospital to studios
more than being a
hospital.
So it functioned as a hospital.
At one time it was a hospital.
Oh, okay.
And then they're like, let's just use this as a set. And at the end of every season, a banner would go up on the side of the hospital, and it would say, for lease. And then
and have a picture of an old couple there. It was like like it was going to be future old folks home. Remember that was there for a long time.
And then when the banner came down, it was like, oh, we got picked up for another year.
Right.
So it really was like a year-to-year thing.
So they didn't need to send you press release or anything. They just, you'd know when the banner
came down. We kind of figured it out after a few years of that.
Sweet, we're back.
Banner's out? Okay, great.
I can go on vacation then.
So was there a point where, as the show's obviously taking on a life of its own, was there a point where your particular characters, like, because a lot of the characters on Scrubs started as, like, one-note jokes, like Dr. Mickhead and Colonel Doctor, and they sort of slowly became recurring players. Mm-hmm. Was there a point where both your characters became that, or was there an idea from the start that, like, for instance, as the lawyer to Dr. Kelso, you'd be a big presence going forward, or did it just kind of happen organically? Or?
I think, you know, probably a combination of the two. I think, you know, I mean, when I first got the part, the producer said, you know, this might be a recurring role, which, you know, in Hollywood that means nothing. I've heard that about a dozen times, you know, but he said it might be recurring. And then I think through the writing and through the, you know, my interpretation of the character, I think it kind of grew. But you made that gag.
When Sam doesn't give me, when Sam comes in and nails a scene, you know, the writers see that and they're like, oh, let's put Sam in the next episode. So it's not, you know, like, in all fairness to Mickhead and whoever else, I mean, Sam is an accomplished actor, so he brings a lot of life into, anytime Sam's right over Dr. Kelso's shoulder, it's like so interesting to me to watch. It makes the whole scene so much more interesting. Have you ever seen the movie The Godfather?
Yes.
There are scenes where Marlon Brando is on camera, and right over his shoulder is Robert Duvall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating. Like, Robert Duvall's not necessarily he's not the focal point of the scene.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, that whole scene, it kind of reminds me of Kelso and Ted.
It's almost like an aura that you admit.
It does. It really informs the scene so much. So I think that in the pilot, the janitor, the lawyer, and the Todd were the three supporting quirky characters that made the house, filled out the hospital.
I was going to say, you really kind of inform what the show is about.
Yeah, and then over the years, some of the writers had this idea like, wow, we could make it like The Simpsons and have a million characters. And that's how they just started saying, ah, Mickhead, or Beardface.
What? Beardface!
Beardface.
Fair enough. Do you want to know me, Chris?
Yeah, so have you had many kind of medical professionals or legal professionals who've come up and said they're fans or asked you for any character advice?
Because I know that you do photos with in your scrubs and you encourage fans who are nurses or doctors to wear their scrubs.
Yeah, they seem to like it. It's cosplay, so I feel like I'm in the spirit of it and I feel like they kind of like it. When else you get, it's one thing to get a high five from the Todd, it's another thing to get a high five from one from the Todd, who's actually in character. So I think the kids like that. But I think when people say the medical accuracy of the show, that's because the writers every year were interviewing real-life doctors to get real-life experiences, and then they, you know, so they wrote based on all their research that
they
did. Yeah, they've really shown their work.
And even more than that, there was such an emotional core to the show.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you guys dealt with some pretty big stuff, like dealing with how doctors and medical professionals deal with death, which is, unfortunately, such a big part of the job. Do you ever get people come up who've really been touched by any of that stuff? Any of the deeper stuff the show's
dealt with? Oh, yeah. In fact, most of the people that I've talked to latch right onto that because I think the show worked, you know, was the degree of difficulty in doing a really funny show and then having it turn at the end and catch you off guard and really deal with, you know, life and death issues. You know, I think other than MASH, this is probably the only show that's been able to pull that off.
Oh, for sure.
Definitely. You know, and when it pulls it off well, those are like just tremendous half hours of television, you know. So many people have said to me that have brought up that side of the show and how much that affects them. And I think that's why it's popular, you know, here. And in the UK, it's hugely popular because of the heart. And in the U.S. as well, that's what makes the show different than just a sitcom. Mm. You know?
And there's really no other comedy show like that that's really hit, apart from MASH, like you said.
Right.
There's really nothing that's hit that same kind of balance that means it's still popular so long after finishing.
Yeah, I think that's exactly, that's one of the secrets or the enduring, you know, things about Scrubs is just that, you know, the stakes are high on that show, you know, so...
To change the topic slightly, I wanted to ask you about, because you're a musician as well as being an actor, and your a cappella group, The Blanks, feature quite a bit in the show. How did that come about? Was that organic, or was that planned from the beginning?
Yeah, no, that was, I sung with those guys for a few years, you know, and there was a cast and crew Christmas party, and I said, you know, I've got some, you know, this group, and maybe we could sing a song as entertainment for the party. And we sang a song, and they said, oh, we got to put those guys on the show. That's how it happened. Yeah.
Awesome, man.
You guys were pretty excellent.
Oh, thank you.
And I believe, you toured to Australia before with The Blanks.
Yeah, uh-huh. We came through, and it was a blast. You know, that was my first time in Australia, so it was super fun. Even though it's so hard to really see the place because you're just in a van.
I guess you're coming over and you're working. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was a blast.
And are your music tastes as eclectic in real life as they are with in Scrubs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but, you know, the thing was that it was informed by the show. They decided what... I mean, the first episode when we did Underdog...
That's right, you did a whole bunch of cartoon...
Right, that was because when we sang at the party, we sang Superman, the John Williams Superman theme with original lyrics by one of the guys. And that was supposed to be the song in the episode, but the John Williams publishing people wouldn't let us do it. So then they said, well, you can do Mighty Mouse or Underdog. And we said, we'll do Underdog because we like Underdog. Yeah. So because Underdog was the choice, they made it cartoon themes as the idea behind the show. Mm. And then they did TV themes, and we love TV themes, and so we, you know, and had, you know, some, they said A-Team or $6 Million Man. We're like, $6 Million Man! You know, so that was, but we're quirky weirdos anyway, so it fit in with total our idea of what would be fun.
Yeah. And are there any kind of pop songs that you're itching to do an a cappella cover of?
I wanted to do a medley of pop songs that people sing, have always sung the wrong words to because they didn't. That's what I wanted to do, you know. Big old jet with the light on, Don't carry me too far away. Bald-headed woman. Bald-headed woman to me. We wanted to do that stuff.
I think it's definitely...
Right. What happened? Yeah. What happened?
I feel like it didn't
work. We took a break, and so we never got to it.
You'll get to it.
So,
unfortunately,
it looks like our time is coming to an end. So I wanted to quickly end on a question, which was, you guys had to do some pretty ridiculous stuff in the show. A scene that comes to mind is one of your scenes, Rob, where you're... I think JD's coming over to your house and you're insisting that he wear the banana hammock.
Oh,
and you have like this little closet of banana hammocks.
Yes.
How hard is it to keep a straight face and to stay in character when you're doing ridiculous stuff like that?
Okay. At that point, the line was... I asked Tim Hobart if I could change the line because I said the Todd isn't used to... The line was supposed to be, the Todd isn't used to receiving male guests or whatever.
Like male callers or something.
Yeah, gentlemen.
I asked him if I can change it, the Todd isn't to receiving gentlemen callers. Because that's from the Glass Menagerie. And in
that's
my mind,
correct.
That makes me laugh so hard. And Tim's like, oh, okay, okay. And he's going to do that.
Nice.
And like little things like that, I don't know, they make me laugh and hopefully it translates. But I mean, you know, when a guy's got a closet full of banana hammocks, you let the banana hammocks do the joke. You just try and keep
carry
a straight face.
Carry that scene,
because the visual is the joke, as long as I'm straight. So
yeah.
Playing innocent at the scene of a crime is a good comedy, too.
Is it the same kind of thing for you as well, Sam?
Oh, yeah.
Obviously,
and
you
didn't
have to do any banana hammock related stuff.
Yeah,
not in the show, anyway.
The first time you rehearse the scene and you're reading the stuff
yeah.
out loud and the crew is there, everybody's cracking up. So, yeah. So the first couple times, you can't help but crack up when you're doing it. And then when you shoot it, you hope that you can keep a straight face, but that doesn't always happen. Yeah.
And I guess that'd be a bit harder because your character's meant to be so flat and like
right.
dour and
yeah.
the opposite of life.
Very sad.
Yeah.
Very sad. But once in a while, something makes you laugh because it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much. It's
such
an honor to meet both of you.
Absolutely.
And we're back. It's Christoph and Stu. We're here at Oz Comic Con. So we've done a quick go over the con floor.
Yeah.
What are you feeling, Stu? What are you?
I'm loving
what are you thinking?
It. I'm buzzing.
You're buzzing?
It could be the second coffee, but I'm loving today.
Or the cocaine, or the line of cocaine.
Yeah. Hey, you meet the odd joker here in the cubicle. He offers you something. It's not my fault.
You don't say no.
No, you don't.
That's a Geek of Oz motto. Don't say no.
Yeah, don't say no to drugs, kids. Wow.
So what's your sort of first impressions of the con? We've been in the con for an hour or two now.
Yeah, we've done a fair few laps. I just keep thinking it's got a better vibe than last year. I reckon they've changed the layout. There's more people than last year.
For sure. I think it's going to rival Supernova in a couple, which is the other big Aussie convention in a year or two, if it's not already rivaling it.
It just, everything's better spread out. There seems to be somehow the focus seems to be more upfront right on Artist Alley as soon as you enter the con.
That was my favourite thing. You know, there's a big move in the cons is the fact that they're not comic conventions, really. They're pop culture conventions.
Yeah.
They're making their money on the guests, on vendors. I mean, we passed the massive line for Richard Dean Anderson.
Yeah.
Because apparently MacGyver is still a thing.
Yeah.
So it's very obvious that that's where these guys are making their money.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to see the Artist Alley in such a prominent area. You have to go through it to get to other parts of the con, whereas at other cons, and I think you said even here last year, it was kind of in its own area, cordoned off.
Yeah, and we've touched base with a few people that were in Artist Alley last year, like former guest Paul Kageji.
Yeah, who of course was on a couple of episodes ago, if you want to check that out.
Yeah, and he's out here today with another project he's working on. But even he's saying that, they were sort of tucked away towards the back of the room. This year seems to be a really good balance between all the merchandise and the artists. But it's really cool. Like, it's sort of a lot of families out here. Dressed up.
It's really interesting how these conventions used to have such a reputation for being kind of an awkward white guy fest, which they still are.
If
you're an awkward white guy, head down here right now.
I saw their table. They're actually doing some signings. It's really good. You're just not approachable. That's the problem.
But it's funny that these are becoming such family events. I've seen a lot of prams, a lot of kids in costume. It's really good to see. And and it's great to see that they're very aware and very conscious of keeping it a family-friendly event.
And I think it's what keeps obviously this is what like our generation, sort of the people that are sort of in their 30s to 40s now.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, I know. No. You are. For those that don't know, Christoph is in year 11. but it's now that everyone's sort of growing up in that era. Everyone that's been raised on sort of Star Wars and pop culture stuff are now bringing their kids in there. You see, you know, there's a lot of three-year-olds walking around dressed like Deadpool, which I don't think I'm ready to fully comprehend yet. But
yeah, no, I feel like maybe Deadpool's not three-year-old appropriate, but who am I to judge?
But we are currently recording next to the 501st.
Well, I feel like we have to get some photos. I feel like we're contractually obligated.
They look fantastic. There's a Wookiee. There's Batman, who we've got him up on Twitter at the moment. This is a hell of a Batman.
Yeah, no, quite a good costume. We were talking before about the difference between looking awesome in a costume and sad. On the convention floor, Batman looks awesome. When he was in the car park trying to find his car earlier, not so awesome. Fine line.
He was trying to find somewhere to put his keys, and I'm like, surely you've got to...
I believe they're called bat keys.
Yeah. Oh, no, but it's been a great... It's good. I've had a really good day so far. So we've got a few things lined up.
Yeah, we're lucky con fatigue hasn't set in yet.
No.
These are... For anyone who hasn't been to a con, they're tiring.
Yeah. It's a lot of, like, you know, we haven't dived into all the junk food yet to give us that little boost, our morning tea pie. But yeah, what else are you looking forward to the rest of the day? What have we got lined up?
Well, we've got an interview with Christian Reed and Andrew Constant, who write us for the Gestalt Comics. We actually had like quite an in-depth conversation with Christian before, and part of my mind was like, oh man, we should be recording this. But anyway, we're going to be sitting with them later, which I'm really looking forward to. They have a lot to say about, you know, the Aussie scene. A lot to say about comics in general, and they're both really talented writers. They have really, really good stuff going on. Now, great. Continuing on the comics guest theme, Greg Rucker's here, who's one of my favourite writers, really talented guy. He's sitting next to Nicholas Scott, because him and Nicholas Scott are working on a new series for Image called Black Magic, which is, he's described it as witch noir. So it's about a cop who's also a witch.
Oh, nice.
So, which sounds like a ridiculous concept, but in Rucker's hands, you know, in Rucker's hands and Nicholas Scott's hands, you know it's safe.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to stop by a little bit later. I got a book of his I'd love to get signed and just say hi to him.
Big Star Wars influence this year, obviously coming up to Force Awakens the end of the year, but that feels like last year was a fairly, we only had sort of...
You're saying the 501st kind of presence was much smaller?
Yeah, and it just like, there. And again, maybe it was just spread out throughout the con. This year it's got its own location, but there was only the sort of the mock trash compactor. This year there seems to be a little bit more.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stormtroopers, a really nice looking Darth Vader over there.
It looks like
a Wookiee.
The hallway for the Tantive IV, I think that's the...
Yeah, that spaceship thingy. I don't know much about Star Wars.
That fly thing.
Not my strong point.
Shame on you.
Yeah, I don't know why you keep me around.
Leave the con.
It's probably because I am gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. You keep morale up.
It's an audio medium, so yeah, no one can call me on that.
With your luscious locks.
Long blonde hair. I'm wearing like a pirate shirt that's...
And how do you... Your hair always seems to be blowing in a wind that I can't feel. This isn't right.
I'm just Fabio.
I'm feeling ripped off. So, well, what are we going to do now? Are we going to wander around a bit more?
Let's do it. Let's hit the floor.
Check in later, guys.
Test. Hi, I'm Greg Rucker.
Hey, thank you so much for agreeing to do a quick interview. It's so awesome to have you in the country.
My pleasure.
Is this your first time in Australia?
It is not. I was in Melbourne, I want to say about 2009.
Okay.
Maybe 2008. I can't remember exactly. And then went off to New Zealand for a week.
Awesome.
This is now what? We're on week two because we did the show in Brisbane. Last week, so this is the second time to Australia.
Okay, sorry, the weather's been so terrible.
Yeah, I have to say, your weather in Sydney's been shit.
It's been pretty shit the last...
We lie all around the world saying it's the greatest place in the world.
So you're doing it the other way around.
Yeah.
What you needed was the great weather and tell everybody it's shit, and then everybody will not come. I got caught out in the storm the night before last, walking up to Potts Point, and there was literally a moment when we were walking uphill where it felt like the wind was going to pick me up and propel me. And
into the ocean.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, that's a little...
This town is awesome.
Yeah, so... People have been lovely.
That's good to hear.
Weather, not so much.
So you're writing a Dragon Age comic.
I am.
Dark Horse. I know you've worked with DC and Marvel before, so you're not... The idea of working in someone else's world is not new to you. But is there anything different, given that this world exists in the video games?
Is there anything? You know what? This is the difference. When you know, working in Marvel and DC, the universe is always in motion.
Yeah.
But there are so many moving pieces to that that you tend to be able to isolate. You tend to be able to. I'm making hand gestures that absolutely don't come across in recording.
For the purpose of the transcript.
Yeah. Greg makes wild hand gestures like he's wrapping his head in something. I know some of the BioWare people. I'm friends with a couple of them. So working on Mage Killer, they have a very clear idea of the universe. They know, and they really know. The universe is quite a large one, but it's not as... I don't have a nice way to put this. It's not as obese as, say, a DC or a Marvel. So that, you know, working with somebody like Mike Laidlaw or Patrick Weeks, these are guys who actually have a command of all the variables. So, you know, I'm working on a story, I say I want to do this, or what do you need me to do? Because in large part, works like this, in my opinion, exist to serve the larger whole. And the larger whole is the Dragon Age mythology, the world of Thanos. So in that, it's actually quite intimate and very immediate that I can email Patrick and I can say, can we get on the phone in a couple of days? Can we talk? And he can say, could you do this? You know, it would be really cool if you did this because we're doing this thing. Don't do that. That makes it really a dream. They've been delightful to work with.
Is it more fun to have a bit more direction than working with something like Marvel or DC?
Well, yeah, and that's part of the trade-off too, right? Because the universe is confined, because it's so well delineated, right, then I'm able to say, well, I've got an idea, but what do you guys want? And then they can say, we need this, we're looking for this, we would like to see this. You know, here's a portion of the universe we haven't been able to get to yet. Can you get in there and maybe do something with that? And it's like, hell yeah, why not?
Better than retreading something that maybe 70 years worth of canon already.
That's exactly it.
Another version.
And there's always the pleasure of being able to add. You know, you feel like you're contributing.
Are you...
We've been talking about it a lot. What did I do?
I saw that.
For you at home, Nicholas Scott's just stolen Greg Rucker's
pen. Yes.
Allegedly.
That's all right. That's all right. I think she's stealing back the Sharpie I stole from her. This will be going on all weekend. Shows are free. Yeah.
So you're also doing a lot of creator-owned work at the moment. So, like with Stumptown and Labyrinth. How important is that?
And Black Magic, coming out at the end of October.
Well, I want to talk about Black Magic in just a minute. Yeah. But how important is creator-owned work to you in terms of keeping you sane? Because obviously Dragon Age is an awesome opportunity, but you're working in some of the universe.
Well, right now... But work for hire, I mean, I'm doing Star Wars stuff too, you know? One of the privileges of being able to play into other people's universes is that they're other people's universes. It's work for hire. One of the things that I adore about creator-owned work is that I get to do whatever the hell I want. And having put in over a decade doing whatever the hell other people wanted, it is very nice now to be able to commit to, I get to tell the story I want to tell the way I want to tell it. And I get to work with the people I want to work with to do that. Because a lot of time when you're working in the mainstream, you don't have the privilege of being able to choose your creative team.
Because they shouldn't pay you up with an artist and writer and all that.
Yeah, if not corporate, they're certainly publisher decisions.
Yeah, totally.
So, it's incredibly rewarding. You know, and it's nice finally to be able to tell the stories the way I want to tell them. Because there are always stories where you go in there and, you know, somebody's always going to say, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, the Thumpa Thumpa has started again.
It's pretty noisy.
It's awful.
It's what the crowd wants.
So speaking of being able to do whatever the hell you want, your new book, Black Magic, if you've described it for which you are.
Yeah.
How did you come up with that idea? It's a bit of an odd pairing. It made sense to me.
Yeah, Nicholas Scott and I are launching this series at the end of October. I had missed writing cops, and I wanted to write a cop.
Okay.
And I have no idea what happened that... I was reading something, I was interacting with something, and I started thinking quite seriously about Wicca and those who practice.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's got to be a way to tell that story and tell it well.
Because it's certainly not a religious group or a belief system that is often portrayed, certainly not the favorable light.
No, it tends to get short shrift. And it tends to be looked at either askance or just outright ridiculed.
Yeah. Well, how do you go about then researching that? With a lot of talking.
You do a lot
people?
Of reading.
Yep.
And you talk to people who actually practice.
Okay.
And it turns out there are a lot of people who actually practice who don't talk about it because they are tired of being mocked, demeaned, or otherwise.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But there is actually, it's like all things, you know, if you go looking, you'll find the information. It then becomes a question of finding the right information, knowing that you are drawing, all right, this is, I don't know what that is. That's got to be an in-joke.
The Imperials have gone green.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, they're trying to change their public image.
That's a total in-joke because there's a thing in the fourth issue of Shattered Empire that would make sense. Dead serious.
But do you find the policing angle is a good way to go to explore a world like
that? It's the character.
I mean, the story is about a detective named Rowan Black who's wicked. Who's what we call a trad witch. She practices a tradition that she can trace back almost 6,000 years. So the tension is, how does she keep that faith balanced with her professional obligation?
Exactly.
And the collision of these two lives. And the fact is, there is no way to balance them.
I guess that's where the drama rolls.
Yeah, that's
exists,
exactly
that's
it.
So when you were talking to people who identified as Wiccan,
we've got people lining up, so it's all right.
No, no. Well, thanks so much for your time, man.
No, no. Let's do a last question. That's not me going, get out. That's me going, I've got people waiting. So
the people you talk to identified as Wiccan, how do they kind of respond to the fact that you're writing a book about their faith?
It's been very positive so far. I've got one friend in particular who I go to and I say, you know, I'm looking to do this. And we have some very good conversations. You know, I mean, the nature of what we're doing is it's drama.
Yeah.
And human drama is about, in many ways, human failings, about people making poor decisions. So it's very important in Black Magic that Rowan's flaws as a human are human flaws. They are flaws all of us have. Her faith has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And wanting to express that, wanting to treat the belief with respect, you know, that's very important to everybody who's working on the book. So, anyway.
Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, sorry.
Right, we'll go this one.
Intercept.
And this one.
Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks,
man.
All right, I'm here with Christian Reed and Andrew Constant from Guest Talk Comics. Thanks so much for taking time out, guys.
No worries.
No worries, mate.
So first up, how are you finding the con so far? Your table seemed to be pretty swamped, and I heard Unmasked is selling really well.
Apparently, yeah. Selling lots. I don't really know. I just sign the books, and they put them in front of me. I've done it a lot, so I guess that's good.
No, it's what he said. It's actually really busy on the floor. We can't move, which, you know, causes breathing issues. But that always is a sign that the show's going well.
Unless you die.
True, if you die, not going so well.
But that's not my problem.
What a way to go out. I do what he loved in a queue at Comic-Con.
Just give him a burial of Nerf swords and just set it on fire and send it out to the... It's terrible. Let's move on.
Out to Darling Harbour.
Buried on, like buried how you on wanted your to styrofoam go. Shield. As you...
And your Captain America shields.
Yeah.
Plastic slowly melts.
Yeah.
So, Christian, you finished issue 4 of Unmasked.
Oh, my God.
And we were talking before that was a bit of a... Took a little bit of time to get that out.
Unmasked should have been out about 18 months ago, but we've had artists go to hospital, artists with serious family emergencies. We've had files corrupted. We've had ancillary creators, like, walk out. We've had ancillary creators just... be terrible. We've had some good ones who just couldn't commit and we thought we were going to work out. We've had Comixology. Comixology is just the great maw of comics. You place it into the maw and it will bite or it will not. And it might take months. And it took months. But we've got it out. Number four is out. We've got the trades, the kind of exclusive trade out today. And we will have a bigger, better kind of DVD extras later on. Hopefully early next year.
So is the fourth issue, that kind of wrap up your first arc, or is that kind of the whole story?
Well, we're calling it for, okay, this is like a quotation marks, the Unmasked Universe.
Yeah, okay. So you're hoping to do more? Because you've got the spin-off Caddy Full of Blood as well.
You hear me dying when I say Unmasked Universe? That was the sound of my soul living in shame.
Is this the Reverse?
The Reverse. But basically it's a series of linked tales that will be about. So Caddy Full of Blood, which is kind of like a one-off, is a story of two supervillains told as a kind of psychotronic road trip to the 1950s Teens Gone Bad movies.
Okay.
Of Frankenstein X and Baby Doll Draculina, and their attempts to fix the Caddy Full of Blood, which has been wounded. And as that story goes on, their tremendously messed up relationship comes into focus. And that's what Unmasked will be the stories of the villains and the losers and the bad guys and the guys who never ran. You won't be seeing stories of world conquest. You won't be seeing stories of superheroes saving the world. It's about the little dudes who never made it. And so the first Unmasked, which we're now calling... What's it called? Oh my god. I've seen it literally like 50 times today. Going Straight is No Way to Die.
Yes.
Going Straight is No Way to Die is done in four issues, one story. We have another one coming out.
Same characters or different characters, same universe?
The second miniseries will be different characters except for one character, who is the Duchess, who is kind of like a wheeler dealer fixer. She's the guy behind the guy. And we'll probably go back to Simon and Nancy in a little while. And then we've got another miniseries kind of plan, which hopefully Paul Mason will draw, which is kind of like our what if Jack Kirby characters got really drunk. And so that will be and then we'll see how it's sailing, and we'll see if we want to go further. So that's our master.
Awesome, man. So Andrew, you've got issue 2 of Broken Line.
Yes.
Out. Now it's kind of a Mad Max, sorry, yeah, if you could just maybe in a little bit more. It's kind of a, I guess your kind of take on some of the themes in Mad Max.
You know, I'm an Australian who's over 30 who likes science fiction, so I like Mad Max. And I was heavily inspired by it and riffed on it quite a lot in Broken Line. But having said that, it's still its own thing insofar as it's a weird post-apocalyptic setting in that there's a lot of supernatural overtones.
Yeah.
And the characters are not what they seem, and by the time you get to the end of the second issue there, all your beliefs or all your preconceptions they are.
Because there's definitely a bit of a big twist, which I won't spoil, but at the end of issue 1, which kind of suggests that things aren't really,
which aren't they seem. And by the time you get to the end of issue 2, they're really not what you seem at all. And all the characters have either been destroyed, changed, or grown.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So is it doing better now Road Fury's come out? Are people kind of more interested in those kind of stories?
Yeah, well, look, Road Fury is its own beast as
For sure. To compare the two.
No, but I just mean, like, Road Fury's fucking awesome. Like it's been my favourite film of the year by far. And I think it is doing better because of people's renewed interest in the apocalypse there. But, you know, you talking about Road Fury and Broken Line in the same breath is a bit... To me, it's a bit strange.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but Road Fury is just brilliant. And I love my Broken Line, but that's been great this year. I've watched it like 5 times now.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Something else I want to ask you is Broken Line's kind of a uniquely Australian story, but at no point did I feel like, because with a lot of Australian stuff, we kind of feel the need to throw in a kangaroo or just be like aggressively Australian to the point where it does disservice its story. In Broken Line, you're able, it feels uniquely Australian, but it never rubs it in your face.
Yeah, look, I just think it's not a natural voice, but I just like to think of it as I'm not trying to construct some sort of like cultural artifice. It's not it's not a hyper Australian viewpoint. Like, I do kill a wallaby, and in issue 1 we do drink its blood, but I
cultural artifice.
I know, right? Yeah, I just got to have all my words just be slapped.
Most of them on the bingo card for this interview.
Yeah, I'll say the same in my next birthday card. Happy cultural artifice.
Cultural artifice, we've got a universe, the unmasked universe.
Stop saying it.
The Reediverse. We've got the Reediverse.
I feel like, the Christian Reediverse is something completely different.
Yeah, the Christian verse. No, that's... Come on.
You can't see me, radio listeners, but my head is in my
hands. Just like
hands.
In your hands. Shame.
The shame is palpable in this room.
No, writing Broken Line was just like a thank you. It was a chance to have fun with what's a really awesome medium. Like, you don't see... I just really wanted to write a really good car chase, basically. Because... No, it's true. Because it's really hard to do car chases in comic books.
I was about to say, it's... Because you're working with static images to portray that much emotion and excitement.
Yeah.
What's it like riding, when you're sitting down, like riding a car chase?
It was actually pretty hard at first because you have to make sure there is always a sense of momentum and how you portray that. And so it doesn't get boring. You try and marry the emotional states of the drivers with the cars.
Yep.
So that way there's always some form of tension being portrayed and you always... showing some form of development, dramatic development, whether that be the cars itself or just the emotional states of the protagonists. So look, it's fun and it's hard, but when you get it right, it is worth it.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably really rewarding to be able to see that on the page.
And look, having said all that, I could not have made it look... It wouldn't be even average without... the awesome talents of Emily Smith, who just makes it look phenomenal, as does Mark, who does the second issue there as well. But yeah, like, you know, all I do is put stupid words on the page and they go, yeah, I can make that look cool. No worries, we can work it out.
Were there any change in kind of the way you approach writing between the two artists? Because I know artists have different ways they like to work. Some like full script, some like a Marvel script.
Well, look, the great thing is, like, you give a script over, but that's not the end of communication.
No, of course not.
That's just the start. Like, once you give the script up, then you talk about what you want to do, talk about that's in line with what they want to do, make sure that you're serving the artist as well, because you want them to have fun. It's not just all about, you know, this is my ultimate goal. No, you're not a dictator in that regard. But, you know, the most important thing is just to have really good communication and make sure that everyone is on the same page.
And something else I wanted to ask you about, you're writing Sebastian Hawkes at the moment.
I am.
What's that like? That project's been in work for a while. There's a lot of expectation on it, and I assume a lot of it was probably mapped out when you came on. What was it like jumping on that?
Look, the great thing when I came on is that they had the core concept. I was allowed to rewrite the story from the ground up.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, so the story's completely mine. The characters are, of course, Greg's. And honestly, it was a lot of fun because the lead character's not the most upstanding moral being of all time.
He seems to like his whiskey and cigars from the...
Whiskey,
the
cigars, and killing beasts, basically. And by beasts, we mean monsters. It was a lot of fun. Dabari, who's doing the art, has been phenomenal.
The art looks amazing. It's incredible. It's just gorgeous.
It's incredible. The whole book's called For Monster and Country. Monster and Country. Comes out in three parts, and we're just close to launching the first part now.
Awesome.
But close. I'm not sure when that is. But
yeah.
It'll be out soon.
Awesome. So, Christian, I wanted to ask you about one of your newer projects, Karnak, which the first issue's dropped.
Oh, yeah. First,
do you
want to
give us, like, the elevator pitch? Sorry, it's such a wanky question.
No, it's okay.
The black room at the back of the club.
We've got a few, but we're kind of calling it Doctor Strange meets Doctor Who for the geekier audience. We'll know who Doctor Strange is.
I love that.
Yeah, it's all right. Or, you know, like Sherlock meets Supernatural.
Because it's got some kind of paranormal investigator kind of aspect to
it. It's a high-tech supernatural investigator. And what we did, what we wanted to do is that probably the first ever supernatural investigator was a character called Thomas Carnacki. And it was so long ago that the writer died in World War I. The guy who wrote it, a chap called William Hope Hodgson, pretty much invented modern horror. He was doing tentacles before Lovecraft.
And before the Japanese. Way before that.
Yeah, and Karnak is basically the template from which all the supernatural investigators are drawn from. And he's well known amongst the kind of like, you know, strange, weirdo crowds like me.
And so you wouldn't know any of them, would you?
Yeah, yeah. No. Not that I would admit in public. So he's well known amongst a certain crowd of people, but so we wanted to try and have a look at how modern characters have been updated. And a big one was Sherlock, the TV show, which I'm not actually particularly a fan of, but I liked the idea of let's recontextualize this very, you know, Edwardian character and make him, what would he look like? And of course, Carnacki used high technology at the time. You know, like he used the amazing radio valve and stuff like that. What's that? I've created a fluorescent light. Oh my god, it's science fiction.
So obviously it kind of had to be updated a bit.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I've worked in that kind of, like, horror, supernatural field before, and I really like it. I'm going to keep working
on it. You did a bit of that with Eldritch Kid,
the novels, and I like it. I'm going to stay there. But I wanted to do a different spin on it. I wanted it to feel modern. Karnak is now a kind of just mad person who just turns up and solves your problems for you and asks for money. And this is just...
I like the asks for money part at the end.
And this is the story of how he meets Cass, who will become the Carnacki stories were written that in a dining room, you know, light cigars, gentlemen, and let me tell you the story of. So what happens is that Cass, who becomes that character who tells the stories, and she
is kind of like the point of view character.
She will be the point of view character that I hate this example, but it's just very easy to use, so we use it. She's the Doctor's companion.
Okay, that's what I was kind of picking up.
Yeah. And I don't even really watch a new Doctor Who, and I was surprised by how I'd recreated that that vibe, that dynamic. It certainly wasn't something I based it on.
No.
So it just worked out that way. And so we've got something that hopefully feels a little bit, you know, like... first episode of a TV show.
Awesome.
And we're going to do it as a French album, so
really?
Sort of, yeah, about 60 pages long.
Oh wow.
Try it in French style, so you just buy it, there it is, maybe even overprint it, see how we go. Sales look pretty good, so we might do a second. We've got loads of ideas for the character.
It sounds like, yeah, the core concept seems like it's so rich, there's so much you can get out of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's this character like that, like, let's do high-tech supernatural investigation. You know, easy. So we've got it all planned out. We've got loads of these. We're going to try and do it in these 80-page ones rather than a 4-issue mini or an 80-page graphic novel.
Okay.
Easy for the artists.
And
easy.
Do you think it'll read better as kind of one hit?
Yeah, for sure. But we'll see. Like, this new style, French style, is something that we're experimenting with.
Sorry, let me just make sure this is...
Oh, good. No, it's still working.
Yep.
I'm afraid it's just going to, like, die on me.
Me too.
But I guess that sounds more like the sort of the Netflix binge watch drop content for people. If people like it, they'll plow through it. If
we are actually trying new kinds of ways to get this information out and get these comics out to people, because, you know, we're a small Australian indie company.
Yeah.
We can't do it like Marvel does it or DC does or even Image. We can't really use direct distribution because they don't care.
But you also can't really. I guess if your books aren't dropping with a solid or with regularity, people aren't going to wait necessarily to, you know, if you lose a bit of time.
Yeah.
If it suddenly becomes 8 or 9 months, you've lost people. But if you get people, if you can get them in a binge kind of like, oh, here's what we do, I don't know.
The thing that really decided for me that I was like, right, no more of this, was the problems with Unmasked. There was, you know, like over a year between 3 and 4. And it wasn't our fault.
No. You were saying your Comixology just kept you waiting for months.
Yeah, for months and months and months. And, you know, Comixology is busy. They're busy people. It's not blaming them. It's just a fact that occasionally it vanishes. And the thing is that we can't rely on the same distro. We can't rely on the same techniques that the big companies use.
No.
And if we did, we'd die. We'd vanish. So... after trying that 1, 2, 3, 4 miniseries, I'm not going to do that again. But anyway, that's Karnak, number one.
So how do you manage that as like indie guys? How do you manage, do you build up to a book, obviously with all these social media platforms, do you build up then just your life, if you drop it in that binge form, then your whole life can just be that for whatever, 6 months, then you can move on to the next thing, or is it like you're keeping, you got multiple plates spinning at a time to try and do... How do you convert your energies into that?
I think...
Sorry.
My apologies. Hello, phone. That's a really hard question to ask. We're, as I think Christian said it best, we're always experimenting with new ways to deliver our content.
Very wise.
He is very wise. We both have our first book. I just said it seriously as well, and I'm not joking. Look, seriously.
Well, he created the Christian Reedverse.
Yeah.
Christian Reedverse.
The Creedverse. I can't even... No, no, that's terrible. No, yeah. Look, both our books, our first books from Gestalt, were graphic novels, and they were quite large, 120 pages or so for each of us, and that worked out really well. But part of what we want to do as well is make sure that readers are getting continuous content from us so they can see what we're doing as well. So we have experimented with single issues like Fly, and also 50-page stories such as Karnak for Christian and Broken Line for me, which will both be volumes as well.
Caddy Full of Blood is 40-something pages long.
Yes, sorry. Well, exactly, it was 40-something pages long. So look, we're just going to keep... I think I can't speak for Gestalt or Wolfgang who runs yourself, but I think the idea is keep on having a variety of format approaches there so we can contact readers in a variety of different ways. That's from purely digital as well up to the large opuses like Eldritch Kid, like Torn, and like Nocturne and the other larger books which come as well, because that's an incredible piece, and that took a long time to actually create.
Yeah, I think for us as creators, it's hard because we're not the editor, we're not the publisher, we're not, you know, we don't have the financial risks that they do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, but as a creator, I don't think we've really found the exact sweet spot for indie distro yet.
But it's constantly evolving market. Even, you know, the big companies are struggling to figure it out.
Well, even 3 years ago when Eldritch Kid came out and when Torn came out, Comixology wasn't really a thing 3 years ago.
I remember, it might be like 1 or 2 years ago, DC's big selling point was that digital comics came out the same day as physical comics, which now seems like quite a no-brainer.
Yeah. And an expectation. Is that before DC and Marvel hit up Comixology, it was a good place for indie guys to go, and it was a great... But then Marvel and DC come along, and then Dark Horse and Image and all the rest of it, and they stomp out indie press.
Oh.
Yeah. Because, understandably, well, I'm going to make $5 million this month from DC, and I'll make $2,000 from Gestalt. I think I know which one I'm going to
put my... Which horse you're going to
back. And that's the thing, is that, you know, there are... Just creatively, it's still changing, it's still mixing up. Not to sound too much like a wanker, but artistically, I prefer graphic novels, I prefer that big chunk.
Yeah.
Here's a long story, you will like this and you will read it a few times. It can be hard on artists.
Yeah.
It can be very hard, and that's part of why we tried with Unmasked to do 1, 2, 3, 4, so the artists would see stuff coming out. I've got a new book called Dread Empire, which is magnificently drawn.
That's... sorry to inject, but I've seen some of the pages, and they... Sorry.
Hello. I think I saw some of the pages on behind the panels, had some of the pencils, and they looked gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
And, it's very hard for the Simon, the artist. He's done, like, you know, 70 or something pages. He's nearly finished, but he's tired, and it's, you know, like, when is this going to end?
Yeah, yeah.
So we kind of got to know, it will come out, you will have this amazing book at the end of it.
But I guess the delayed gratification's hard.
It's very hard, you know, and, but, so for me, it's not always my decision to make, but Dread Empire couldn't be 1, 2, 3, 4 miniseries. It would be terrible, it would chop it up and give a structure that would be bad for the story, which is, you know, like, you're always balancing the aesthetics and the commercial realities, and so
no different to any other, I guess, artistic endeavor where they're trying, either looking at, I guess it's what we're learning from that sort of Netflix model of things, is that we try and move an art into where you've got some kind of subscribing fan base always that you're just servicing, or do you then start to get swallowed by the bigger...
Just the other day...
...bigger fish, but then you might not have the freedom to tell the stories that you
want. Just the other day, I saw this really fascinating... Netflix released this information about when you start becoming addicted to a show, when you start really loving a show, and it's based on drop-off numbers and stuff.
Yeah.
And this was really interesting. The pilot never really grabbed people's attention. It was... of shows, it was usually about the fourth episode.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, for some it was seventh. Like, slower shows tended to take a lot longer. And so the traditional model of, you've got to get in with a bang, you know, you've got to absolutely grab their attention, might not be true.
Well, you look at, like, you know, shows like Seinfeld and things like that where they had to beg to get a second and third.
Yeah.
And they went, this isn't catching on, then all of a sudden enough people start to talk about it. Or The Wire.
Yeah.
Like, people, you can ask people, when do they fall in love with The Wire? And it's about four or five episodes in, and there's always the one scene where everyone goes, that's when we got hooked. But you can't, I guess it's hard to get people's confidence to come along. And I guess only your previous work goes, look, trust us, we're going somewhere.
I think that's one of the things, is that Andrew and I both now are beginning to build up a body of work.
Yeah, there's a few portfolios out there.
Yeah, and so, you know, like, Andrew's done, what, three series now?
About
four
that.
Series with Sebastian.
Yeah.
I've done a few. And
as well as your work outside of comics as well.
Worked on computer games.
That's right, Hand of Fate was the most... Is that the most recent game you've worked on?
Yep, I worked on Hand of Fate for my crew up in Brisbane. And that was fun.
We've been talking today just, you know, about Geek of Oz and the website and trying to get our numbers up and whatnot and just trying to engage with a fan base kind of thing. Do you guys feel as creators like a constant pressure to be engaging your personal audiences or to be developing those as a...
What I should use my social media for.
No, what you should... Do you feel the pressure for that or do you
is.
Feel...
Oh, I do. But instead of using my social media presence to engage and promote myself, I just get drunk and spout communist propaganda.
Yeah, which is pretty entertaining. I enjoy most of your Facebook.
Every time I feel lonely and sad, I look at your social media and I feel a bit brighter.
That's terrible. It's like, okay, today let's talk about shamans of the rainforest. What's wrong with capitalism, you dogs? And that's
on
not
your new
how,
iPhone that you just bought.
that's not how you win people over to your book. Like,
surprisingly, that's...
You want to see how many people the cop shot today? I am bloody terrible at social media. You're much more relaxed. You're much more restrained.
I'm restrained merely because I privately mouth off about a lot of things. So, and, you know, I'm just... No, look, I have what I call a lot of buyer's remorse. I don't want to do that on social media.
He's on the reefer.
Maybe next life.
He's on the reefer.
I just can't. I'm always, like, if there's something I'm passionate about or maybe I feel funny, social media for me is a really hard beast to get my head around.
For sure. And especially now people are, like, trawling through people's Twitter feed to see if they've said something slightly offensive.
Culture outrage. No, not touching that one because the culture outrage will come for me.
So yeah, look, honestly, the pressure is there. We both know that we should be much better with social media.
But at least your work speaks for yourselves. Speaks for itself, right?
I think
no one's ever, you know, like, we've never gotten a call from the Gestalt Dark Masters and been told, like, you must take that down.
No.
Nothing like that's ever happened.
We aren't inflammatory. Like, we post our opinions and they're always, I think we stand behind them. Especially some of your better ones, which I stand behind as well and applaud.
I'm so bad. I literally look back and I say, like, you've done three posts on why the police should be defunded. What are you doing?
The views of Christian Reed don't reflect that of Christian Reed.
What do you mean we should make profit an outlawed thing?
Actually...
But buy my book.
Christian doesn't know this yet, but we've been speaking the Wolfgang. We're actually going to do a book of Christian Reed thoughts, which is just going through all his social media and putting them down for public consumption.
Animated as a children's book.
Oh my god.
Oh no.
Sorry,
guys, just got
another chicken.
No worries. So, I think we've almost taken about half an hour of your time.
Ah, cool.
So, just to wrap up, I want to ask a question because people refer to the Aussie comics industry. It's not really an industry as much as sort of a collection of Aussie creators. How do you. And the marketplace, as you were saying, with, like, using the example of Comixology, is so crowded. How do you speak to consumers in such a crowded marketplace? How do you grab people's attention?
Communism.
A lot of it comes down to how good the brand of Gestalt is. Like, the reason which Chris and I were attracted. I'm just going to speak like I'm inside Christian's head, so I can't stay too long.
Well, if you've looked at his Facebook feed, you pretty much get in there.
No, that's typically iceberg, I've been told. The reason I think Chris and I are both attracted to Gestalt is because of quality. And totally. That's the thing you get with Gestalt, is you get this badge of quality because all their work speaks themselves. So we're very lucky in that regard, in that we can say we put work out through Gestalt. Gestalt is always high quality, therefore, ergo, we're high quality as well.
Yeah, you've got that backing behind
you. Yeah, you know. And look, it is independent Australian comic books, but within that, it's a very strong force. It's a very committed force to quality work. And it's you know, it's the place I like to put all of my books through.
In a way, I'm actually the wrong person to ask, because that's why I publish and don't self-publish. Why it's important to me to have the relationship between an editor and a publisher and me and the comics reading audience. So I think because we don't have huge PR budgets, we don't have huge marketing budgets, all we've really got is the fact that hopefully our comics are really good.
Yes.
That's all we can really do. That's the only thing we can trade on. And you've got to remember is that Gestalt, it's not a charity. It's not...
it's a business.
I pitch stuff to Wolf and he says no. He says this is not good enough. Yeah. That does happen. I've pitched stuff to Sky and Sky's going, I'm not sure about this. I don't think so.
Which is probably better for you anyway. Like if you were just someone said yes all the time...
I'll tell you a story. I think this will explain... what it's like working for Gestalt, right? I read this Vietnam horror story. Horror story set in the Vietnam War. Awesome. Like, dudes down in the tunnels, this horrifying Vietnamese fairy story about a dragon called the Tarrasque, and the fairy people of the Vietnamese royalty, and all the stories of the Vietnam War, because I read a lot of history and stuff, and, you know, like this absolutely terrifying encounter that the American GIs had with the... Vietnamese underground was basing it around, and I thought this was badass. I was like, shit man, this is gonna make $1 million, yeah. And I gave it to Wolf and he had it, and about 2 weeks later he comes back and he goes, it's racist. I'm like, I'm not bloody racist, you're the racist. That, you know, like that kind of like immediate, yeah. Like he goes, no, I think it's a bit racist. I'm like, it's bloody not. He goes, go back and read it again, pay attention to this and this. I'm a racist.
Oh no,
I feel terrible. Just punched myself out, just anti-fascist myself. Shaved my own head and gave myself kicking.
But I guess that filter of the editor really ensures a certain level of quality then.
And precisely, if I had released this book by myself that I was so proud of.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, someone would have gone...
Someone else might have called you on it.
Yeah, and gone, Christian Reed, you are a horrible racist.
Which is great.
In which case, I would have had a very public meltdown.
You would have looked great on YouTube. And you go on the wrong way.
It just would have gotten like crazy Ron Burgundy style at a convention panel. Like, look at me! I'm very racist! And so... But... And now I still love that story. But... it's not going anywhere because... it had these elements that I did not see and thought I had overcome. And that to me is the Gestalt experience. It doesn't matter how good you think it is. It doesn't matter how many tickets you've got on yourself. It will have to pass muster, and you don't get a free pass because you've done good work before.
Yeah. Plus, they also know they've got a feeling for what the market wants. Like, yeah. It's like filmmakers. You might have a gritty story you want to tell, but they go, or... we sell this happy story that people will spend $20 to come out and see. Like,
but
it's a balance.
Having said that, though, they're not there to feed the market what they think it needs. Like, that's one thing we love about Wolf. Wolf's like, first things first, is the good story. If it's a good story, we'll find the market eventually. Like, it's all about how good the story is.
Yeah. There are some things. The next novel that Wolfgang is going to publish from me, called Nil Prey, is a fantasy novel that's super weird, right?
You doing super weird stuff?
Yeah, man.
Stop the presses.
And we'll talk about that in a little while, because it's too early to talk about. But it's just very strange. And I gave it to him and I said, what do you think about this? Not actually as a formal submission. And he goes, oh, I'll give it a go. It's really weird. Like, it's been... every major publisher said, like, it's super good, but it's too weird. We can't sell it. So... gave it to Wolf and Wolf said, I'll find a way. So... But he didn't. He said no to other projects like that. He's gone, no, I can't. It's not going to work. So that's the Gestalt experience. Now, you know, we don't have... I'm not trying to give the appearance of, like, come to us for the finest in quality comics. Everyone else is bad. Peasants, no. Because there's great, yeah, there's great work coming out. Tim Malloy's stuff is fucking badass.
Yeah.
You know, Dougie Holgate's The Hellhammer, his stuff is amazing. Tristan's gone great guns. You know, so there's all those great guys out there. But for us is that we work together to make sure always that it's good as we can make it. And that is what it means for us to publish with Gestalt, is that we know that we're... our work is okay. And sometimes the poor little artistic self-esteem needs that.
Needs a quick kick, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
And again, you want to plug your books one more time? So, Chris, to read from you, it's Unmasked.
Unmasked.
Unmasked Caddy Full of Blood.
Caddy Full of Blood, the crazy psychotronic spin-off. And Karnak. And, of course, the novels like Case Files, new one out soon. And look out for Neil Frey. And that's it.
I've got Torn. We also have Broken Line, issue 1 and 2. Complete story. We also have Fly, and also coming soon, Corks.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, guys, and enjoy the rest of your con.
Thank you.
You sell lots of comics.
Thank you, boys.
Hey, guys. Well, this is about all from us. We've had a blast here at Oz Comic Con, haven't we, Stu?
Yeah, it's been a really, really fun day.
Tiring, con fatigue has well and truly set in.
We've done about 50 million laps.
Yeah, a lot of walking. Cons are like 90% walking and waiting.
You picked up some books?
I did. I picked up some stuff from Gestalt. All the books that they just plugged in the interview, I'm looking forward to reading, and I'm sure I'll be talking about them in future episodes.
Yeah, we had a good talk with Mr. Rucker, and then a nice way to wrap it up then with
yeah,
Mr.
Andrew
and Mr. Constant.
Yeah, they're doing really great stuff. So, you can check out gestalt.com. I think it's their website. I'll link it in the show notes,
yeah,
because they do some really good stuff. Both of them have quite a bit of work out, more than what they mentioned, but that's just their latest stuff, so check it out. Same with Greg Rucker. Him and Australian artist Nicholas Scott have Black Magic, which we talked a bit about, coming out, I think he said October.
Yep.
So check that out, check some of his other work out. Would highly recommend Stumptown, which I've talked about before, really good book, and Lazarus is also another really good one from him.
Thanks for checking us out.
And yeah, please review the podcast on iTunes, subscribe, let us know what you think. Got any feedback, please let us know. As always, our contact details are going to be in the show notes.
And if you want to come on, just drop us a line. If you're a comics creator or anyone that wants to come on and plug something or you want to chat about something, we're always open to
As we said before, you know, the show's what you guys want to make it. We want to make something that you're interested in. And part of that is, letting you guys help us shape the show.
And if you want to just, like, give us money, that's fine.
We're also open to that. Yeah. No problems with that.
And we will accept any amount. So don't say, oh, I've only got too much money to give them. It's fine. Like,
we won't be offended if you just throw large amounts of money at us.
Consider it welcome.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. For Geek of Oz, I'm Christoph.
I'm Stu.
Thanks heaps.
Bye.
Been listening to Geek of Oz Presents Read, Watch, Play. We discussed all things pop culture, including comics, video games, TV, film, and anime.